All right, good evening, everybody. Welcome back to our 30 Ideas in 30 Minutes. I want to thank our generous sponsors for tonight. Paul Balint, in honor, in memory of his sister's yurtzeit, Ilana Bracha Bas Kalman Yaakov, her neshama shenav aliyah. Paul, thank you very, very much for your sponsorship. And of course, as always, every week, we are tremendously grateful to the generosity of Dr. Michael and Marilyn Fedak and gratitude for the many weekly learning opportunities at BRS. And we have the opportunity to thank Dr. Fedak in person tonight. We're very grateful that you are here. And for those who attend regularly, we are very, very grateful. Very, very grateful for your generosity, your sponsorship, and more importantly, to have you here tonight. It means a lot to us. So thank you very, very much. Okay, here we go. 3 ideas in 30 minutes. Oh, our wiener winner tonight goes to Jack Lazar, of course. Looking fantastic down there, Jack. Great job. Coming to voluntary learning on summer vacation. The hot dogs don't hurt, but voluntary learning on summer vacation. So thank you, Jack. Okay, here we go. Idea number one really encapsulates all Parshas Maaseh. So we know that there's 2 Parshios, Matos and Maaseh. Maaseh is all about the travels of the Jewish people in the desert, the 42 travels. We spoke about it a little bit on Shavuos Batamas. We've spoken about it since then, that there's a correlation between the 42 travels of the Jewish people in the desert and the 21 days of the 3 weeks. 3 weeks is 21 days, 21 days, 21 nights, 21 plus 21 equals 42. And so there's a correlation between the Jewish people's journey in the desert and our experience here during the 3 weeks. But ask Rav Shimon Schwab a question that is such an amazingly obvious question that you'll say to yourself, how come I never thought about that? And the answer is because you probably never really paid attention to Parshas Maaseh. But after this, after I tell it to you, you're all going to say that's an amazing question. And that is as follows. If you pay attention to the parts of the journey in the desert that are recalled in the second Parsha this week, you will notice that every single one of the major events that happened to the Jewish people in the desert is not recorded in Parshas Maaseh. Not Kriyas Yamsuf, the splitting of the sea, not the man, not the receiving of the Torah, not the building of the Mishkan. None of these seminal moments in the past 3 books of the Torah, 2 books of the Torah that we've been talking about, are recorded. Instead, what do we get? Well, we get some random, so to speak, randomized facts. So we're told that they go Asher al Pnei Baal Tzafon. We're told Vayelchu Derech Shloshes Yamim, that they go for 3 days. We're told that they, when they come to Elima, that there are 12 things of water. We're told that when they passed with the Meraglim, they found the Mitzrim were burying all their dead. Seemingly, like, trivial facts. And it overlooks completely all of the major events that happened to the Jewish people. That would be like the equivalent of, you know, we just finished our fiscal year here at BRS. We had another wonderful year. And that would be like me telling someone about our year at BRS. Instead of recounting all of the scholar residences, instead of talking about all the amazing events that we had and all the programs and all the concerts and all the whatever, I said, you know what? Over the last year, Junior every Thursday morning put a roll of toilet paper in the men's bathroom. And then on Thursday morning, you know, and then on Wednesday morning, Junior went into this room and he put the chair here. You'd be like, that's what you're telling me about the past year? There's so many great things to tell me about, especially here. We're talking about the miracles of Hashem. We're talking about the receiving of the Torah and the Mishkan and the Man and the splitting of the sea. These were great seminal moments in world history. How could you overlook that? You don't talk about any of them in Parshas Matos. And instead, we essentially get the equivalent of Junior put the toilet paper in the bathroom on Thursday morning, right? Obviously, I'm dramatizing that. It's much more important. So that was his question. That's his question. He says here, again, you look at the Hebrew. He says, "Venira behekdim mashiyish ladaktik v'seder amasos." He says, "We don't understand these travels. Shedileg al kol amaoros agadolo shoklal Yisrael." It skips over all of the major events like Kriyas Yamsuf and the Man and Mara and the Matan Torah and the Mishkan. Umaskir kama dvarim asher lechora nirim kainin karim. Instead, it tells us about events which don't seem important at all whatsoever. So this is an idea. It's a question that I'll call it like a mega question, because it's not just like about a pasuk in the Parsha. This is a Dvar Torah you can use in the entire Parsha. Really encapsulates and questions the entire Parsha. Why is it that the Torah told us certain things and didn't tell us other things? Listen to Rav Schwab's thesis. It is such an unbelievable answer, and it is such an important lesson of life. Okay? And I'm going to explain it to you, and you're going to say, that's something I have to think about. Rav Schwab says each one of these moments had the potential to be a great miracle. And yet, the Jewish people passed by it, and they basically sleepwalking through the entire experience. In other words, they came to certain moments in the desert. Certain of them were obvious, the splitting of the sea. Okay, anyone would appreciate the miracle there. But there were many, many other events that happened in the desert that the Jewish people should have stopped and said, wow, that is an amazing miracle. They should have been so inspired by it. And instead, they were sleepwalking through the desert. They were completely oblivious to it. It was just another day in paradise, and they didn't even notice it, and they didn't stop to think about the role that Hashem was playing in their lives. He says, I'll give you an example. One of the examples was that they was talking about when the Mitzrim, and it talks about how they were burying their dead. I don't have the exact pasuk here, but that's what it's talking about, okay? And he asks, like, why do you need to tell me about that? What's so significant about that story? He says, because if you think about it, what should have been the Jewish people's reaction there? The Jewish people's reaction, pasuk 4, sorry. Talks about, doesn't talk about the splitting of the sea, talks about that the Egyptians were burying those among them who Hashem had struck. Why is that such a significant thing? Right? Why is it such a significant thing? He says, because if you think about it, what weren't they doing as a result of that? In other words, Hashem was essentially distracting them. Hashem was putting the Egyptian focus elsewhere, distracting them from the Jewish people so that the Jewish people can continue on. In other words, that was something that they should have looked at and they should have said, wow, that was like an amazing chesed, amazing act of kindness from you, Hashem. But they missed it and they blew the opportunity and they continued to go on. He gives another example. In Elim, these 22 things of water, 12 things of water. So again, why is that significant? What do we care that there were these 12 things of water? Pasuk Yadalid, right? Why do we care about that? The answer is, what else does the number 12 have to do with? The number 12 has to do with the Shvatim. Did anyone stop and think about the significance of the number 12 and the message that Hashem was thinking them? No. They simply did what? They continued to go on, completely oblivious to all of the messages, the subtle messages that Hashem was giving them. What word do you see instead over and over again in the Parsha? You see the words Vayachanu, right? Vayachanu Sham, Vayachanu, Vayachanu. Now we translate Vayachanu as they encamped. But Vayachanu means, what are the, like when you go to, when you set up a camp, what do you do? You're not playing like Mahjong at night. What do you do? You've had a long day of travels. You set up your camp. What do? You go to sleep, right? So says Rav Schwab, Vayachanu Sham. Every time it tells us that they rested, it means that they were asleep at the wheel. They should have gotten to these places and said, what a miracle, God. What an amazing act of kindness. And you know what they did instead? They got there, they put their head on their pillow, and they shluffed, and they went to sleep. And so he said, Vayachanu Sham, Beli his palus, ubeli his orus. They weren't inspired. They didn't stop to see the miracles and the messages that Hashem was sending them. And so, in fact, every story in Parshas Maaseh, you're right, it's not the major events that happened to the Jewish people in the desert. It's not about the splitting of the sea, and it's not about receiving the Torah. You know what it is instead? It's everything that could have been a big event had the Jewish people appreciated it properly and understood the message that Hashem was sending them. Now, why do I think this is such a beautiful idea? Because tragically, I think we all do this in our life, and certainly the Jewish people as a whole, but all of us in our individual lives as well. There are many, many opportunities for us to find Hashem, see Hashem, have a relationship with Hashem, stop and appreciate certain things that Hashem is communicating to us every single day. But what happens, like the Jews in the desert, we miss those opportunities because it becomes natural to us, because we're busy, we get up, we're running from here, we're running to there, we're busier, everyone's so busy. But because you're so busy, you miss those little signals that Hashem is giving you. Right? I remember vividly, I've quoted this in the past, but I remember when my mom first came down to Boca, she rented here during COVID. And at the end of, I think it was like 4 or 5 months, so we were talking at the Shabbos table, I said, you know, Ma, what was like one of your the biggest surprise of being in Boca here. She said, you know what the nicest part was? She was here during the winter. She said, every morning I went out and I would daven on the patio. And it was like amazing to listen to the birds as they were chirping in the morning. And there was like such a beautiful interaction between that and my davening, whatever. And I remember sitting there thinking, I'd be like, I've lived in Boca. At the time it was whatever, it was like 14, you know, 12 years. I said, oh, they heard a bird chirp once. I'm like, where are these birds hiding out, Ma? So I went out the next morning. Sure enough, the birds chirp in the morning. It's a beautiful thing. But you know what was happening? I was so busy running to davening and running to here and running to there, I never stopped to not smell the roses in this case, but to hear the birds, right? There are so many examples like that all over us. You could have almost get in a car accident at the last second, pull away, and you're going to think to yourself, oh, phew, right? It's a gift from Hashem. You might have a health scare. That's a gift, right? There's so many of these opportunities around us. But what happens? We're on to the next news cycle. We live in like a rapid-paced society. And so something, even if it like inspires us for a millisecond, 2 seconds later, we're distracted by something else. We don't appreciate the miracle or the message that is taking place. And so in fact, says Rav Schwab, we're no different than the Jews in the desert. Of course, there were great miracles, but there were also opportunities for them to experience those miracles. They just missed it. They completely were oblivious to it. They were sleepwalking. Vayachanu sham. Every time they got to a place, and they should have been able to appreciate the miracle and the blessing that God had given them, Vayachanu sham, they simply put their head down and they went to sleep. They were sleepwalking through life. Says Rav Schwab, we have to wake ourselves up. We have to wake ourselves up. There are so many opportunities throughout our day to experience the blessing and the miracle. We can't sleepwalk through life. Yes, no.
So when you say Vayichan sham b'kara'ar b'har Sinai,
you have to figure that out. I'm not sure. That's what he does here, though. Tzarech Ian Noam. But I will tell you another, because Noam just questioned me, so I'll have to pivot now. But if you look at Adam, so the Pasuk by Adam, which of course I don't have here, but the Pasuk by Adam says that Hashem put Adam to sleep when he creates Chava, right? Remember again, he doesn't want him to hate her, so he doesn't want to see that she came from his rib, so he puts him to sleep. So I think it's the Kutzker who writes that if you pay attention, it never says Adam woke up. Says Hashem put him to sleep, and never says he woke back up. And the message that is that human beings sleepwalk through life. The job, our job in life, is to constantly try to wake ourselves up. Not wake ourselves up physically, but to wake ourselves up spiritually. To see the world through a lens that will allow us to experience the world not in black and white, but in 3D. And that's Pokeach Ivrim. When we say in the morning, thank you Hashem for opening my eyes, it's not just physical eyes. There's a spiritual lens that we have to put on ourselves when we go through the world that wakes us up to the numbness and sleepwalking through life. That is all idea number one from Rav Schwab. I think it's a very, very beautiful idea with a profound lesson to it. Idea number two comes from Rabbi Y.Y. Jacobson. We've gone a few weeks without an English source. I knew I needed to come back from my those that I promise will always have an English source here. Rabbi Y.Y. has a very beautiful idea. The Pasuk tells us, Vayal Aaron HaKohen El Hor HaHar, Al Pi Hashem, Vayamar Sham B'Shanas HaArba'im, Latzeis B'nei Yisrael Me'eretz Yisrael. So Aaron is going to pass away in the 40th year in the desert. B'Chodesh HaChamishi B'Echad LaChodesh. On the first day of the fifth month. Now what's the first day of the fifth month? Nisan Iyar Siman Tammuz Av. So Rosh Chodesh Av, which we're going to commemorate on Wednesday, Tuesday night, Wednesday, is the yahrzeit of Aaron HaKohen. Okay, very nice. Very nice. Asked Rabbi YY, based on a beautiful sicha from Lubavitch Rebbe, that's a very strange thing. It is the only time in the Torah where we are told the yahrzeit of somebody. Nobody else. He says here, why Aaron? Even with his own siblings, Miriam and Moshe, we don't see in the Torah the date of their passing. Why was his passing day enshrined in the biblical text? So more than anybody else, not Moshe, not Aaron, not anyone else, never tells us the date of their passing with one exception, and that is Aaron HaKohen, Rosh Chodesh Av, this Tuesday night, Wednesday. What's the significance? Says Rabbi YY. He says what's more is that the date of his death is not mentioned in the actual story of his passing. Don't forget, Aaron dies already in Parshas Chukas, where it seems to belong, but rather in the portion of Maaseh when discussing the 42 journeys. So what is it doing here? It's out of context. And those of you who want to tell me when Aaron HaKohen died, Tell it to me when he actually dies. Tell me when his yurtzeit is back then. Why do you wait from Parshas Chukas all the way to the end of Sefer Bamidbar to Parshas Maaseh? That's the question. A very simple question. Listen to his answer. Lubavitch Rebbe explains that we know that what was Aaron's unique character trait? Aaron's unique character trait was Oiv Shalom Verodev Shalom. That Aaron HaKohen was someone who loved everybody. Now, he didn't just love everybody, but Rabbeinu Yonah and the commentaries on Pirkei Avos explained to us that Aaron had a very unique way of loving everybody. If he saw that two people were in a fight or arguing with each other, so he would be a little tricky. He would go over to Reuven, he would go over to the first person and say, you know, Reuven, I know you and Shimon are fighting. You should know I spoke to Shimon the other day and it really, really bothers him. Like, he really wants to make up with you. And then Reuven says, okay, I'll go. I'll make up with him. And then he goes to Shimon and he says, Shimon, you know, I was talking to Reuven and it really bothers Reuven that you guys are in a fight. He really wants to make up with you. He feels very bad. And Shimon says, you know, you're right. I'll go talk to him. And so each one thinks they're doing the other person the favor and they come and they reconcile. So Aaron HaKohen didn't just love people, but he specifically excelled in the area of bringing people together, of avoiding machlokas. In fact, someone came up to me last night and they referenced that perhaps there was a machlokas in our community that I was unaware of. And they said to me, they said, you know, maybe this is during the 3 weeks as we approach the 9 days, maybe this is a good opportunity to work on reconciling between those two people. That's Aaron HaKohen. That's what he did. Aaron HaKohen saw two people in an argument and he worked to reconcile that. So what is the purpose then? Obviously now, hopefully you'll understand why we're going to get to our answer. So he writes here on top of page number 3. The Gemara relates that 80,000 young men were all given the name Aaron, came to eulogize Aaron after his passing. So Aaron had 80,000 people named after him. They were children born from parents who wanted to get divorced, and Aaron saved their marriage. They named their babies Aaron in tribute to the person who saved their marriage and allowed these children to be born. So Aaron HaKohen wasn't just creating peace between, you know, this guy, a business deal went bad, or the neighbors were fighting over the hedges, right? Where did he create peace? Where did he create peace? It's Shalom Bayis, that a husband and wife would come, and he was the first marriage therapist in all of Jewish history.
Almost six people a day.
What?
Almost 6 people a day.
6 people. Thank you for our resident actuary, Ethan, for always doing the math quickly. By the way, Ethan, last time you did that, someone else said they also got it, but they came a little bit of a different number. Another actuary who listens to the shir. So we'll see if he comes with
it.
You're approximate. Six people a day. That was Aaron's.
Six couples a day.
Someone will have to figure out the billing on that, right? What Aaron was able to bill on that. But Aaron HaKohen, that's what he did. He was the first marriage therapist in history. And what happened was because he kept couples together and they had a child, so they named the child after Aaron. This means that over 40 years in the wilderness, Aaron restored peace and trust amongst 80,000 Jewish couples. He must have been one very busy marriage therapist. In addition to serving as the high priest, right, doing the service in the sanctuary and being a prophet and teaching himself, he was busy teaching Jewish couples how to heal and trust, which, by the way, in and of itself is phenomenal, right? What is a gadol? Aaron HaKohen was the gadol ador, he was the Kohen gadol. So you would think that someone like that, he's in the ivory tower. He can't be bothered by dealing with people and their needs. He's got to be, you know, removed from the people. He's got to be sitting in his office worrying about a relationship with Hashem. No, that's the exact opposite. In Judaism, our greatest people are the ones who are willing to get their hands dirty to bring people together and to avoid machlokas. That's such a beautiful idea. Like, what is greatness in Judaism? It's not about, doesn't reference how smart Aaron was. Doesn't reference how holy he was. Right? His greatness was that he created peace between people. What an amazing thing. What an amazing thing. Following decades of trauma in Egyptian exile, this must have been a grueling task. But his love and empathy managed to save the marriages. His efforts were rewarded in kind, with the appearance of the clouds of glory that served as a unifying force, molding the entire Jewish encampment into a cohesive unit. Says Rabbi Waiwai, now we understand on a homiletical level why the yurtzeit of Aaron is specified in the Torah on the first day of the fifth month of the year, which is the Hebrew month of Av. We, of course, know that the Beis HaMikdash, second Beis HaMikdash, was destroyed because of baseless hatred, sinas chinam. This was also true on a political level, which we oftentimes don't talk about. The Romans exploited the infighting between the Jewish people to default Judea, which we saw, obviously, after October 7th, that our enemies, when they see that we are fractured and divided, they're going to exploit that. Okay, that wasn't the first time that happened in Jewish history. So what happens? On the first day of Av, when we usher in the 9 days of grief over our discord and hatred, the Torah tells us we have the Yahrzeit of Aaron, the great peacemaker and unifier, a day in which we can connect with Aaron's energy and legacy of love and unity. Right? A Yahrzeit's not just a day where we commemorate, but a Yahrzeit is where we're allowed to tap into the energy, the spiritual energy of what that person represented. So on the first day of Av, Tuesday night and Wednesday of this week, it's not just, oh, it's a Yahrzeit of Aaron, a Kohen, let's have a L'chaim. But rather, it's able to tap into this midah, this energy of Aaron HaKohen of love and unity, to repair and heal the rifts and mistrust that caused our exile and usher in a new era of redemptive consciousness. This is why the Torah places the day of the Yahrzeit in Parshas Maaseh, right? That was our second question. First question was, why does it tell us this Yahrzeit as opposed to any other? The answer is because there's a significance to this. Aaron HaKohen's Yahrzeit specifically falls on the first day of Av as we usher into the 9 days, because that's what Aaron represented. He represented creating peace, and that's our work during the 9 days, to avoid arguments and to create peace. So then we add a second question. Why doesn't it tell us it in Parshas Chukas? Why does it wait till Parshas Maaseh? He says the answer is because when do we read Parshas Maaseh? Every year. On the Shabbos before Rosh Chodesh Av. Right around this time of the year. It is during this time of the year that the Torah wants to empower us with the energy of Aaron to restore cohesion, trust, and love amongst our people. It's a very beautiful answer to a simple question of why he's the only Yahrzeit mentioned in the Torah, why in Parshas Maaseh, not in Parshas Chukas. But more importantly, what it does is it gives us homework for Tuesday night and Wednesday. Tuesday night and Wednesday are particularly auspicious days for creating that sense of love and unity and cohesion and trust amongst the Jewish people. And so I implore you all, if you are in an argument with someone, if you have had a machlokas with someone, if you've had a beef with someone, this is a great day, Tuesday night, Wednesday, in honor of Aaron HaKohen's Yahrzeit, to repair that relationship. If you know of two people who are in an argument, this is a great opportunity to try to bridge that gap, just like Aaron HaKohen did, and to be able to create a certain sense of cohesion. What a beautiful way to memorialize Aaron HaKohen and to go into the 9 days, and please God, avoid Tisha B'Av altogether. That's idea number two. Idea number three comes from a beautiful sefer, Gvuro Shlomo, or Shlomo Kluger. And for this, I will bring out the glasses. Okay, here we go. In Parshas Matos, I'm leaning in. I'm an old man. But every time I tell myself I'm an old man, and you'll appreciate this, Dr. Fedak, I run around the circle and I say to myself, no, not that. I say to myself, half my age people couldn't run around the circle at the speed that I'm doing right now. So, you know, my eyesight might be going, but everything else is working just fine, I think. What?
The other half might be faster.
That might be faster. Okay. Makes me feel better, at least. I don't know. Okay, here we go. Whatever works. Parshas Matos. So we know, of course, in Parshas Matos, towards the beginning, so there is the end of the battle with Midian. And at the end of the battle of Midian, we know that there are spoils of the war, and the Jewish people divide those spoils. That's where we get the halachos of kashering, of agalas kalim, that after they took the utensils of the Midianites, so we're introduced to this concept that you have to put your vessels in a mikvah, and that's where we derive the halacha to this day of kashering, etc., etc., etc. At the end, as they're dividing the spoils, Rav Kluger points out something very interesting, and that is that there is a discrepancy between how they divided the spoils. So I'll read you two psukim. V'harimosa meches l'Hashem me'is anshei ha'milchama, and after spoiling, they gave a tribute. In other words, they gave essentially a little bit back to Hashem. So Hashem gave them 100, they gave 10% back. Okay, meiser, right? So they give back. He says, you shall raise up a tribute to Hashem from the men of war who go out to the legion, one living being of 500 from the people, the cattle, and the donkeys, and the flock. Okay? So essentially, those who go out to war, they are going to give one 500th of their spoils. On the other hand, two psukim later it tells us that everyone else from Jewish people who also benefited from the spoils of the war, they are going to give 1/50th to the Levium as a tribute to Hashem. Now again, Ethan, you'll correct me, I'm not the mathematician here, but I believe that 1/500th is less than 1/50th. Is that correct? Okay, so good. My math is correct here. So why is it that those who go to war get highlighted for giving an infinitesimal amount, 1/500th, while the rest of the people who give a lot more than that, 1/50th, barely get mentioned? They get mentioned afterwards almost as an afterthought. Why is it that the 1/500th group who went to war is given more importance and more honor than the people who brought 1/50th as a tribute to Hashem? That's his question. Once you understand the question, it becomes such an obvious question in the pasuk because it makes no sense otherwise why there's such a discrepancy, a delta between those two. He says beautifully, he says, you have to understand the difference between those who went to war and those who didn't go to war. Those who went to war worked really hard for what they earned. They sacrificed enormously for it. When you work hard for something and you've earned it through your blood, sweat, and tears, for you to give it up is really hard. Because you say to yourself, you know, they didn't kill themselves for it, but they almost killed themselves for it. They risked their lives for it. They put their lives on the line for it. The other Jewish people, what did they do for the spoils of the war? They did nothing. They sat back there. Says Rav Kluger, when you give of yourself, when you give charity from something that you worked hard for and sacrificed for, and yet despite that, you're willing to give it up to Hashem, that's really meaningful. If you didn't work hard for anything, you were handed on a silver platter, you never had to work for it, it simply showed up in your bank account, for you to give that away, it's not so impressive. You didn't work hard for it, it's easy for you to give it away. It's specifically when you break your teeth and you kill yourself to earn that paycheck, and despite the fact that you're working two jobs to earn the paycheck and still you're willing to give a little bit to Hashem, that shows the significance, that mesiras nefesh, that sacrifice, that means a lot more to Hashem. So let's read a little bit. He says in the second underline, Hein hein hadvarim da'anshei hatzava, those who went to war, kevan dehi masru nafsham lemilchama, since they sacrificed for the war, v'yafa pichei nasnu mimenu meches, and despite that, they gave to Hashem. Right? What could the soldiers have easily said? They said, we already did our part. We went to war. Let everybody else give the tribute. I did my time. I don't owe Hashem anything. Despite that, what they do, they still gave. Despite that, l'chein zeha me'at shenasnu chashvu lo yishbarach keharbe. Even though they gave very little, Hashem appreciated it very much. Kevan dahavi bekavana ratzon v'nisayon, because it wasn't easy for them to give it up. They had every excuse to fight Hashem on that, and yet they gave it themselves. And so Hashem says, you know what? When it's really hard for you to do that, and you worked really hard for it, and you gave it up nonetheless, that means a lot to me. On the other hand, when it comes to everyone else, avachela ka'am, kevan sheim natlu bechinam b'li amal v'yegia, it was handed to them on a silver platter. They didn't have to work hard for it at all. Ein chiddush ma shenasnu mimenu meches l'Hashem. It's no chiddush that they gave a great amount to Hashem. Al kein av shenasnu harbe, even though they gave a lot compared to what everyone else gave, lo zachar smucho kamahu. Hashem didn't value it as much because there was no mesiras nefesh in there. This, I think, can be applied to many areas of our life. I'll apply it to tzedakah right now, right? Obviously, everyone who gives tzedakah is amazing. And everyone should give tzedakah. But sometimes it's a very big nisayon to give tzedakah. People work really hard for their paychecks. People sacrifice a lot of their time, of their energy, of family, to be able to go and to work hard and to earn a paycheck. It's really hard when you get that paycheck to then have to give away tzedakah of that paycheck because you worked very hard for it. It's important to know that even though it's hard for you and the sacrifice that's involved, it's the more sacrifice that it takes, the more Hashem appreciates it. The more Hashem appreciates it because He knows how hard it is for you. He knows how hard you worked for it. If it came easy to you, easy come, easy go. It didn't mean anything to you in your bank account. It doesn't mean anything when you gave it away. It's specifically when you spend a lifetime working hard for it, and despite that, you're willing to give it away, That's indescribable how important it is to Hashem. But I think it also drives at a much more fundamental thing that we have to think about a lot. And that is, and we talk about this a lot in this year, don't run away from things that are hard. There are oftentimes things that are hard. For some people, going to Minyan could be hard. For some people, coming to a shir on Thursday night could be hard. For some people, coming to shul on time on Shabbos is hard. For some people, not speaking Lashon Hara is hard. Whatever it is that your difficulty is, and your test is, and we have successes and failures in those tests. Sometimes we underestimate how much Hashem appreciates the effort that we put into that. And so let's take an example. Let's say for you, it's coming to Minyan. Coming to Minyan. It's hard for me to get up in the morning, right? And maybe on this particular week, you only got there 4 out of the 6 days. Maybe even 3 out of the 6 days. But those 3 days were really hard and you pushed yourself and you got there. Instead of focusing on the 3 days you didn't get there, focus on the 3 days that you did. You might not have given the greatest amount. You might not have matched someone who came all 6 days. But for you, those 3 days, that was a big win. And that was hard for you. And that was an assignment. And that was a test. And so it might have been smaller than someone else who went 6 days. But because it required that much more sacrifice, don't sell yourself short. Celebrate yourself for that. Feel good for those small victories and understand that Hashem appreciates it, even though it might not be as quote-unquote big as someone else, but because it involved the sacrifice, it's indescribable in its value to Hashem. And so we saw three ideas in just over 30 minutes. Idea number one from Rav Schwab was to stop sleepwalking through life, that there are many opportunities to see Hashem, but we miss them just like the Jewish people miss them in the desert. Idea number two, Rabbi Waiwai, the first marriage therapist in history, Rosh Chodesh Av, the Yahrzeit of Aaron HaKohen. Why is it the only one mentioned in the Torah? Because that's the energy that we're supposed to tap into. Idea number three of Shlomo Kluger, very beautiful idea. Don't judge it by the amount, but judge it by the sacrifice that went into it. Right? So it's not quantity, but it's quality. Lefum Tsar Agra, according to the effort, Hashem gives us the reward. And with that, I wish everyone a beautiful Shabbos.